Good morning, good morning. This is Joanne Bowman, and it is my privilege today to have a guest co-host, Mr. Tom Charney. Welcome, Mr. Tom. Welcome, Tom, to the studios.
Well, thank you, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is very cool to have you here guest hosting with me today. As the listening audience knows, we are bringing in lots of people to act as guest co-hosts since my partner in crime deserted and left the state. And I want to tell you a little bit about Tom. Tom's a community activist who wrote and edited an online progressive newsletter. And the thing that he's most proud about is he's a proud father of a 13-year-old daughter, Katie. So, Katie, here's your heads up. And he's been living in and active in the Portland metro area for over 9 years. So it's a real pleasure to have you here today, Tom. And we have a fabulous program for our listening audience today.
Yes, we do, Joanne. It's going to be, very educational for a lot of our listeners in the KBOO community because it does touch to the matter of community access.
You're right. We're actually going to get to the core of, I love the quote that I got off the front of this magazine. What we're going to be talking about today is the Communications Act of 2006, a bipartisan piece of legislation that was introduced in Congress last year by Representatives Marsh Blackburn, a Republican out of Tennessee, Albert Wynn, a Democrat out of Maryland, and Senators Gordon Smith, you may know him from here in Oregon, Republican, and Jay Rockefeller, Democrat out of West Virginia. And so normally when you look at a bill that's bipartisan, you think, well, how bad could it be, right? Because you've got people on both sides of the aisle and both thinking this is a good thing. How bad could it really be? That's really what we're going to talk about today. And we've got some incredible guests that's going to be joining us. We're going to hear from Anthony Riddle, who's the executive director of the Alliance for Community Media, and he's out of Washington, D.C. Then later in the program, we're going to have two guests in the studio. We're going to have Rob Bradding. He's the executive director of Multnomah County Television in Multnomah County here. And Jeff Bissonnet, who is the board president of Portland Community Media. And I might add, I'm a new board member as well of Portland Community Media. He's also an experienced lobbyist as well. And so I think this next hour and a half, you're going to get much more information than you probably ever thought you wanted to have about this Communication Act. And I think it's really critical as community members that we understand what's at stake.
Yeah, I think that's really important too, Joanne. The idea behind the Video Choice Act as they're presenting it, especially the Senate bill by Senator Smith and Rockefeller, says we need more choice and freedom, and competition will lower prices. Well, after we speak with our guests, I think we'll understand a little more that that probably will not be the case, and what we'll do is shut off public access to these services.
The quote that I remembered was, and I don't remember who made the statement, but the quote was, this bill is really about who gets to speak, for how much money, and to whom. You know, it really comes down to those very three basic points. Who has access? Who gets to speak? How much do they have to pay to speak? And who do they get to speak to? Because it's really about, that's really what it's about, you know?
It is.
And community radio, community TV, community access to media has been the only saving grace in this community, and I would suspect across the country, as we've been, as this administration has gone through the last 6 years. Just feels a lot longer.
Seems longer than that, doesn't it?
It does. It seems a whole lot longer. So the number is 503-231-8187 is the number for you to call in. We're going to be connecting very shortly with Anthony. I am really interested, Tom, in why this issue is so near and dear to your heart.
Well, I actually am a community access junkie, to be honest with you. I have found such good programming on our community access stations and community radio stations where I feel that I can at least get the truth. And it widens my understanding. I'm not getting the corporate, which we all know how much of our media is owned by so few corporations, that I can get a non-corporate view of what's actually happening in our community, which is important. It's not a national. It's local community access that is being threatened. And I think a lot of it is community access speaks truth to power, and they don't enjoy that.
Yeah. It's not what their folks are paying to get on the air, that's for sure. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I have in the studio with me Tom Chani, who's my guest, co-host today, and we will be talking to Anthony Riddle in just a couple of minutes. And later in the program, as I said, we will have Rob Bradding from Multnomah County Television and Jeff Bissonette, who is currently the board chair for Portland Community Media. And we'll be talking about really what will the local impact be if, in fact, this Communications Act of 2006 passes. But what there are a couple of things that we can share with the listening audience right now. I mean, what we know is that if this legislation passes, there will be, we will lose what we currently have as far as local control. So our local governments will not be able to set rates. They will not be able to regulate utility companies in their day-to-day business in the community. And quite frankly, the biggest fear is that this will actually allow these types of companies to redline various communities. We already know that when you talk about laying cable line, there's this big controversy about really what does it cost? What does it cost to lay cable lines, especially in rural communities? Because if you think about what the population is, they would probably tell you that, you know, that's just not a lot. They don't want to make that kind of investment in communities that don't have a lot of people where they feel like they would, in fact, really have a big bang for their
investment.
It's
not cost-effective.
Not cost-effective. So we have our first guest on the line. Welcome to the program, Anthony Riddle.
Hi, how are you this morning?
We're doing well. We really appreciate you being here this morning. And Anthony Riddle, you are the Executive Director of the Alliance for Community Media.
Yes, that's absolutely right. The Alliance for Community Media represents the public educational and government access centers around the country, of which we estimate there are about 3,000, with maybe controlling about 5,000 channels on cable systems, using about 1.2 million volunteers, producing 20,000 hours of programming per week, which is more than all of the local broadcasters combined, and really serving about a quarter of a million community organizations per year.
That's pretty fabulous. Gosh, when you put it all together like that, who knew that we had that much community media in our local communities? So we would love it, Anthony, if you would tell us about Senate Bill 1349. Basically, what does Senate Bill 1349 do?
Well, it's one of several different bills, you know, before either the House or the Senate, and they're all slightly different. But what they all have in common is they tend to eliminate local franchising. That's the local franchising is the means by which, you know, your city allows a company like a cable company or a telephone company to come in and run their wires and fibers through the ground that you own, the public rights of way, which your city has put together. They wouldn't be able to do their business without it. So in order to do business and make these billions of dollars on your land, they have to pay your municipality, either in the form of money, which can be 5% plus or minus of their gross revenues, plus the city is allowed to ask for some channel capacity to do public access, which is the programming that's done by the people in the community, first come, first serve, usually with no control of the content, or educational access, which usually involves K-12 or colleges, and then government access, which you usually see your city council meetings or your town commission and department information services. So that's how things have been set up in the past. All of these bills would eliminate the local franchising in favor of allowing national companies like the telephone companies to come in and start offering these same services competitively without first having to negotiate agreements with your city. That's what 1349 does, basically.
So basically it takes the local government authority out of the equation for determining what's in the best interest of the local community.
Boy, you summed that up perfectly. That's actually exactly, not only is it right, but that's also the problem with the bills, is that, you know, for instance, you're setting up a franchising regime which treats Manhattan, New York, the same as it treats Manhattan, Kansas, and assumes that they have the same needs.
Mm-hmm.
It also, you know, of course, whenever large businesses come in, they're always looking for the best deal that they can get. I guess that's their job.
Right.
And so, you know, even though they in some ways talk about supporting community media in the same fashion, actually, when you look at the details of the bills, they lower the amounts that would be paid to the cities and lower the amounts that would be paid to most access centers, and also decrease the number of channels that would be available. So you have this situation where they're going to be making more money and offering fewer channels, less capacity, and less financial support. So, and really, these bills are just being pushed by the telephone companies because they just haven't had the willingness to go in and negotiate these competitive franchises. They've had 10 years where they were allowed to do it, and now they're trying to claim that, you know, business pressure of the cable companies, these big nasty cable companies, are beating up on the small, weak telephone companies and not allowing them to offer services that will lower your prices and so forth. There's this view that it'll create this great competition, and the prices will suddenly drop in your neighborhoods, which I suppose is a lot like the prices dropping at a gas station on a corner with three other gas stations.
Right.
And, you know, it just doesn't happen. They just look and see who has the same price, and they eventually just all offer the same price, more or less.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and Anthony, you'd also lose local regulation with this bill, would you not? Where the point, you had a problem with your cable company, you'd have to call the FCC.
Well, that's actually what somebody heard, although I heard they were considering having you call FEMA. not really. But
not really, yeah, but that's scary
really
thought.
The point, though. I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, it's hard enough right now when you call the cable company, you know, to get something fixed, but you'll be calling the FCC and saying, you know, my service isn't working. They'll say, well, did you jiggle the cable on the back of the box? I'm not seeing this happen. And so before, the enforcement mechanism was that, you know, these companies, which are huge, you know, had to respond to the local authority because they knew that even if not now, they were going to have you know, franchise renegotiations at some point. And the cities had some ability to, you know, to litigate or whatever to enforce rules. So now you're going to have this situation where, for instance, if it's a big, you know, Ma Bell, you know, providing the service, and let's say they dig up your yard in a way that's just really not right and don't put it back, how are you going to get any kind of enforcement at the local level if the local folks don't have any power of authority over the agreement?
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally skewing the whole thing. So I picture, like, even if the FCC really works at it, you know, they're going to end up in a situation where they say, well, you know, the service is really bad in Portland, but that's just a small percentage of their national market, and overall they're doing well, so, you know,
exactly.
We'll give them some slack, you know.
Right, right. So, yeah, so get off their back, right?
Yeah. Stop bothering them. Then the other thing is, none of these bills have adequate protection against redlining, which is the term that means, you know, that a company can't come in and pick off those customers they think are going to pay the most and then not serve the others. So that right now, if you're in a city, again, like Portland, you know, they're required by law to have to serve the entire franchise area. It doesn't mean everybody has to have cable.
Right.
But it does mean everybody has to have the ability to get cable. You know, it has to pass their house.
That's right.
The way that the new law is being written, this one and the others, it doesn't have any enforcement to make sure that they don't come in and, let's say, just do one area of the suburbs that they think is worthwhile.
Right.
And skip a whole nother area. And most of the bills also have provisions that prevent the cities from being able to remedy that by building their own communications systems in areas that aren't being adequately served.
Whoa, so it prohibits competition by the local municipalities?
Most of them do. Most of them either prohibit or severely limit the ability of the municipality to remedy these problems. And really, I think there's a philosophical thing going on right here. I think what you're seeing, and I haven't been involved in reading law for a long time, in having to read these 75-page bills, there's actually a philosophical shift going on in the country. First of all, when you talk to the people in Congress, the way they describe the bills, they say, well, Verizon wants such and such, or SBC wants such and such. They don't say, like, we're writing this bill and this is what we think.
Right.
They're always, like, citing who the real sponsors of the bills are.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, if you do a word search on all of the bills, not one of them has the word citizen in it. Every single bill has the word consumer, and consumer and citizen are the same people,
mm-hmm.
but it's just calling on a different portion of the nature. And so the state being, if the state is actually writing bills, you know, whether it's municipality, state, or federal government, they're going to be dealing with citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell who the bills are written by the fact that they use the word consumer.
Exactly. So which means that the only people that they're really concerned about are the people they're going to be able to make money off of if
right.
this bill passes, because that sounds
right.
really clear to me.
Yes, and it's a single dimensional view of who we are as a people. And, you know, I'm just going to be fair to them and say, that's fine. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to maximize profit,
right.
so on and so forth. But what the government is supposed to do is supposed to provide balance. They're supposed to provide justice. They're supposed to be able to look at the society and see what the needs of the society are and craft the laws that create a balance between this engine of the economy and the actual needs of the people of the society.
Yeah.
And that's what we're really fighting for. It's not just PEG access. That's just one part of it. If you're going to have this situation where there's two companies, essentially, a phone company and a cable company controlling all of the communications going into and out of your house, think about that. That's a very dangerous situation. It may be economically a good situation for somebody, but politically and socially as a people, it's a dangerous situation. If you're going to allow that, then we have to really demand that 10% of that system be set aside free and open that they cannot touch.
Right.
You know, so that we can continue to have a dialogue like we're having today.
I know we only have a short period of time with you, and so I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to tell the listening audience how they can get involved. What it is you think that our community here, because we've got a really active activist community, what can community members do to have an impact on this bill?
Well, first of all,
bills, I should say.
Yeah. And again, you'll notice I don't just call one out because,
that's right.
you know, they try and get you lost in the details sometimes,
right.
but the principles are all the same. So, number one, check with your local access center. Go to their website. I think it's PCM there.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
They're actually doing a wonderful thing right now. The FCC, for instance, is taking testimony on video franchising and the things that we're talking about. And if you go to the PCM site, they're going to have a template up that allows you to be able to very easily write a letter that will go to all the FCC members. Similarly, if you go to the Alliance site, which is www.alliancecm.org, you can find both an individual template for individuals to be able to do this FCC filing. You also find a link to a letter site, which allows you to either use the letter that we have or change it in some way. You plug in your name and your zip code, and it goes automatically to your entire congressional delegation. And then finally, it's helpful to call your local officials. Mm-hmm. The cities have a lot of power in all this. I think they have to be respected in the political process. So, you know, call them and make sure that they know that you want them to participate in this and that, you know, you're opposed to the bills.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Anthony Riddle, who's the executive director of the Alliance for Community Media.
Thank you very much for being on and giving us an idea of what's happening in Washington in regards to these bills. And thank you.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
You're doing a great job. We need your radio station to be protected as well. Let's not lose that, too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. You have a fabulous day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye now. Okay, so that was a wonderful introduction that Anthony Riddle gave us. And again, he is the executive director of the Alliance for Community Media. And now we have two guests in our studio. And by the way, before I lose my train of thought, Anthony Riddle suggested that you go and check out various websites, including PCMTV.org, which is the local website here. And he also talked about the Alliance. What did he call that? Did you get his website?
The
Alliance website? I think I missed that. But we'll get that again before the program is over and give you the contact for the Alliance for Community Media. So we're going to shift gears again. He's got it in his brain. I should have known that. I should have known we had certified experts here. Oh, excellent. AllianceCM.org is the other website that Anthony Riddle talked about. Thank you so much. So, our in-studio guests, we have Rob Brading, who's the Executive Director of Multnomah County Television. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
Good to be here.
Excellent. And we also have Jeff Bissonette, who is the board chairperson of Portland Community Media. Welcome, Jeff. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Joanne. Good to be here. And also, too, I am the board president of Portland Community Media, but I also work for the Citizens Utility Board, which is an organization that represents ratepayers of utilities. And we do work on telecommunications issues and have been involved in this piece of legislation. So I can kind of add a consumer citizen perspective too, as well as a PEG perspective, since that's been in my personal life and my work life.
So you've got them all combined. That's going to be pretty fabulous. And Jeff, I did announce that I was a new member of Portland Community Media Board, and I'm really pleased to be there. And so this is going to be a wonderful learning experience for us all. And I don't know if you've met my guest co-host, Tom Chani. And so we're just going to have a conversation. We're going to open up the phone lines, and callers can call us at 503-231-8187 if they want to get in on the conversation. We're talking about the Communication Act of 2006, and as we heard from Anthony Riddle, there's a lot of bills in Congress that are trying to, the proponents, of course, are saying they're trying to improve our communication system, but clearly there's a lot of details that we should be talking about as it relates to this. So who'd like to start? Brad?
Well,
Rob, sorry.
That's okay. That's great. Tony, I think, summed it up quite well. I think we should realize that there are several pieces of legislation that are moving through Congress, and it's really easy to get confused and to say, oh, well, this one's worse than this one, and we are talking about a set of bad choices. There are no good choices in this legislation as it stands now. And that the impact of all these pieces of legislation in one form or another would be to remove local control and to threaten my organization and the organization that you just joined the board of, Joanne, which is terrific, and the organization at PCM and Multnomah Community Television and Capital Community Television and a variety, and you know, lots of other organizations like Tony mentioned across the country would be threatened by this. That's not the only impact of this legislation by any stretch, however. I think one of the most important pieces of this is it's about local control. And, you know, talking about local rights of way, I just expect everybody to crawl right back in bed and pull the pillow over their head and go back to sleep.
And say, I'm done, okay.
Yeah. But because it sounds like a real snooze.
Exactly.
But it's one of those topics that you don't pay much attention to until something goes wrong. It's like driving down the road and you don't think about it until there's that pothole in front of you and you're going, oh man, my tire's going to blow as soon as I hit that. It's like, well, our tires are going to blow when we hit this pothole, because this will remove any semblance of local control from our local rights of way. Our local rights of way are the property that we as the public own, that are controlled by, that are managed by our local governments for our benefit. And so that's where people string their wires, where they, you know, natural gas lines go, where electric lines go and all that. It's extraordinarily valuable property. If these companies had to go out and string their wires and negotiate with you and with Jeff, you know, and all of us to do that, mm-hmm. it would take them a century mm-hmm. to do that. And then they'd have to pay me something and they'd have to pay you something. Mm-hmm. So these are extraordinarily valuable. They simplify their work, and it's simply a cost of doing business. They are paying rent to use these rights of way.
And right now, the process is, if I was a utility company and I wanted to come into town here, right now I would have to go to the local government body and actually present a proposal, and then they would have the ability to say yay or nay to that particular proposal mm-hmm. and negotiate the rate by which I would be able to either charge my customers and also the profit. Is that correct?
Well, telecommunications is a little different because they have you can't feasibly say no. And in fact, there have been competitive cable franchises granted in the city of Portland. Back, if we remember the days of the technology boom, there were several franchises that were granted. And then when the market fell out mm-hmm. from under that, the money wasn't there. It was an economic issue. It was right. not a regulatory issue.
Right.
The city of Portland and the jurisdictions that I work for, which are these metro jurisdictions, would love to have competition. Mm-hmm. But there are economic factors that have kept that from happening. It's relatively simple to get a franchise. The telephone companies that are driving, like Verizon and SBC, that are driving these bills would like you to think that, oh, it's really difficult. Well, it's more likely that they spent the last 10 years, as Tony mentioned, not doing very much, and now they're trying to catch up, and this is an easy way for them to do it and to avoid their local responsibilities.
Yeah, and this isn't just a urban issue. This really does affect rural communities as well, because if they don't have to provide service in rural communities, will it be cost effective for some of these companies?
Well, and it isn't even just rural communities. In my area, you know, one of the low income areas is Rockwood, mm-hmm. and I would fear that they would redline Rockwood, mm-hmm. and I believe that wiring Rockwood is one of the best ways to drive it back to economic health.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if they don't want to participate in that, we don't have any vehicle for that. We don't have any enforcement means.
Right.
Then that's not going to happen, and that's harmful to all our communities.
Well, Jeff, Utility Commission, with rate cases and other dockets that affect policies and rates of various utilities, we also practice in front of the legislature so that utility policies, energy policies, telecommunication policies that are being considered there don't adversely affect residential ratepayers. And then in situations like this, because more and more the telecommunications industry is, you know, not regulated by, you know, the PUC or, you know, by anybody, there's a lot of deregulation there. And so it's much more a policy-driven sort of endeavor that we're trying to figure out, well, what's the policy that needs to be in place to either help or protect the consumer or turn aside policies that could adversely affect consumers. And I think that the point that Tony made earlier in terms of you know, citizens versus consumers is very important, and that's actually points that I raise, or I try to raise in forums that I take part in, is that, you know, we call ourselves a Citizens Utility Board for a reason. We're not just ratepayers, but we're citizens in this kind of larger society, and we believe our members say that it's not just about low rates. You know, it's important not only to have a low electric rate, but to have adequate investment in energy conservation and renewables. It's the same thing on the telecommunications side. It's very important to have low rates, but it's also important to have that investment in the public, in the public electronic green spaces that public education and government access represent in communities, you know, across the state and across the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would imagine that local governments must be up in arms about this.
Absolutely.
This is going to happen to them.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. And you know, what we're talking about is, you know, for for you know the communities where we take a very small fraction of the franchise fee and put it into these you know electronic public you know commons. But what it represents to cities is an enormous stream of revenue. Again, we take a small fraction of that. The rest goes to support often general community services, you know, police and fire and you know road maintenance and that sort of thing. And so this is a huge issue to cities, and not only on a financial basis, but also on kind of a local control basis, and you know who can sort of dig up our public rights of way, and who can and how they can do that, and how we kind of have sort of a hold over that, and what a lot of these bills propose is to move that up to you know not only. You know, or not to the state level, to the PUC, but all the way up to the Federal Communications Commission. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'd rather sort of be calling a local office with a local official, whether it's elected or appointed, to talk about what's going on here in the community rather than trying to figure out the Byzantine, workings of the FCC.
Right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're speaking with Rob Bradding, who is the executive director of Multnomah County Television, and Jeff Bissonette, who is the board chair of Portland Community Media. And what we're talking about is the Communication Act of 2006. So what we've clearly laid out already today is that this is a bill that's about limiting local control. We have a fear that if this bill becomes law, that it has the potential to redline communities based on profitability. Okay, can I say that three times? whether that's an urban area that has a high number of low-income people, or whether it's a rural area that the numbers just don't add up to make the utility company feel like they're going to get a big bang for the buck. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, caller. Welcome to cable.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
This is a great topic.
I
want to say good luck to Rob Bradding in his race against Karen Minnis. Thought I'd mention that.
I can't say anything one way or another about that, but if you have anything else you'd like to share about the conversation we're having, that would be great.
Sure. I have a question for Jeff.
Right.
Jeff Bissonette. Now, with your Citizens Utility Board hat, Jeff, you failed to mention that Citizens Utility Board actually represents ratepayers of privately owned utilities, not publicly owned. So does that explain why the Citizens Utility Board hasn't supported efforts to make PGE a publicly owned utility?
We actually have supported efforts to make PGE a publicly owned utility. Not sure that what that has relevance here today. I'd be happy to talk about that at on another show, but the fact remains that we have supported PGE becoming a public utility.
Ah.
Well, I disagree. Can you give an example where you made a public statement in favor?
I think I just did.
Okay, this is the first time in 3 years. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. 503-231-8187 is the number. I think that the good news is that people seem to be aware that this bill is not good for community members. But, of course, we have to raise the awareness and get people actually calling their congressional representatives to encourage them to vote no. I do want to announce that we did call Senator Gordon Smith's office to give him an opportunity to have a staff person come on and explain why he thought this was such a great piece of legislation. And they weren't able to be here today, so we don't get to hear their view. But it's clear that the public really needs to weigh in on this heavily. And the good news is that I know that when we've gone to the public and said, look, this is what's being proposed, and this is the impact on you. And I think about Social Security, where it seemed like that was such a done deal. Social Security was going to go to private accounts, et cetera, et cetera. But because of people mobilizing around the country, we were able to really shift the congressional debate away from making Social Security private accounts. And I think we could do the same thing with this Communications Act of 2006. I think, so what I'd like to do is give both of you an opportunity to say, you know, if people can only do two or three things, what are those two or three things that people should be doing right now?
Oh, I think it's call your representatives and senators, particularly Senator Smith, and let him know, because he is one of the sponsors of this legislation, and his bill could very well become the vehicle that moves through the Senate, and it's important for him to understand. And we've had extended conversations, Jeff and I and a number of others have had long conversations with his staff about this, and they have been reasonably receptive to our concerns and the concerns of the communities, the concerns of the Oregon League of Cities and folks like that. So we do have an opportunity to change. The more he, in particular, hears from folks about this legislation, the better off we will be. And actually, I'd like to add one thing to people's quiver, if that's... and that is one of the hidden pieces of this, or one of the pieces that people don't realize, is there's part of the cable franchise was an obligation to build what's known as the institutional network, which is a fiber network. And what that means in practical terms is that for the school districts out in the East Metro area, that those students have access, have better access, higher speed access to the Internet for less money than they did before when they were using telephone lines. And that makes a huge difference. That's the kind of community asset that will go away if these bills, or will likely go away if these bills pass, and enforcement passes on to the FCC. Because as Jeff said, you know, I've had only peripheral dealings with the PCC through a variety of regular, and they take forever, and their enforcement mechanisms are virtually non-existent when it comes to local issues.
I have a question before you answer, Jeff, and the question has to do with, now, Portland has been on track to become a wireless city. Right? Is it impacted at all by this Telecommunication Act? So would we still have the ability to create a wireless city where anybody would have access to wireless services if this bill passes?
I believe so. And that's the wireless, you know, portion of the telecom industry is different. I think that we will have to. That's actually a pretty good question.
I think it probably depends on how the bills are drawn. It depends on which bill you're talking about, because if it's a very broadly written bill, then I think that you'd probably, that ability would be eliminated. And
just because there is local, you know, sort of the local impact on where cell towers are built and that sort of thing. But you know, we have a variety of efforts not only here locally but around the state. You know, the city of Ashland is a prime example where they have, you know, put in their own fiber network and have run a competitive, you know, cable and high speed internet operation for many years now. And you know, they did that because they weren't getting the adequate service and the adequate responsiveness from the incumbent cable company. Right. And so they said, well, we'll build our own. And you know, you can see a very distinct difference. If you're inside the city, your cable bill is, you know, for if you want to be a charter cable company customer, your cable bill is, you know, one price, but you go outside of the city and it's a higher price. And so, and you know, what we, you know, really want to focus on is that, you know, we have the ability of, you know, local governments to provide services if their citizens want that. And if that is a you know, and so whether it's wireless, whether it's, you know, a fiber-based system, you know, we have to make sure that the ability of local communities to provide that service, you know, stays in place.
And it's very important that people do call and do reach out to their representatives, because there is a massive lobbying effort by the telecommunications industry to get this through.
And as Tony said, this is really driven by the phone companies, because as we see the technology changing, we not only sort of have the voice go out, you know, on the phone lines, but we can have data, and now we can have video. And so what they're saying is, oh, we can provide video services, and they want to do that, but they want, quote, the level playing field. And what the level playing field is, not that public investment that comes from paying, you know, right of way.
I think it's also worth noting in terms of consumers that the only places where cable rates have dropped are in communities where the community itself has built a competing cable system.
Ah.
If it's been two companies, mm-hmm. two private companies that have gone in, which is the case in a few places despite the infrastructure costs, the overall costs have not dropped. Two companies don't create competition, and you can usually find that in almost any economic model,
right.
that two is not enough to create competition. I also want to point out that in the Dalles built a network themselves, and because of that, Google moved in with jobs
mm-hmm.
and their family wage jobs, their, you know, really good jobs. Mm-hmm. Without the Dalles having built the network, that would not have happened.
That wouldn't have happened, right. That's a really good point. So we're talking to Rob Brading, who is the executive director of Multnomah County Television, and Jeff Bissonette, who is the board chair of Portland Community Media. We're talking about the Communication Act of 2006, which was co-sponsored by Senator Gordon Smith, and which the short version is, it is not good for consumers, it is not good for local control, and definitely not good for communities that believe that the public should have a say in the public media realm. We have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Hey, can I ask a couple quick little questions, clarifying questions, and then make a remark?
You can.
Now, what's this thing called? This
the
federal
Communication Act of 2006.
And the Communication Act of 2006 mm-hmm. focuses on giving the phone companies more power and municipalities less power to self-determine. Is that correct?
It actually takes the power away from local communities. Right now, local governments have the ability to set the franchise rates for new service providers as they come in. If this bill becomes law, what happens is all those decisions are made at the federal level by the FCC, and so you end up taking out the local control.
So when I know Palo Alto in California put in hardwire fiber optic, your guest just said Ashland has done it.
Also said the Dalles did it.
The Dalles did it.
Called by there are a number of places.
And I read recently in the Oregonian that the that the city of Portland is actually looking at putting in hardwire fiber optic.
Exactly. They're looking at actually developing a Wi-Fi system that.
Not Wi-Fi.
Okay, I'm sorry.
There's two conversations I think going
okay.
on in Portland, but it was actually a fiber optic. Now, so my question then is. So this is pretty much an attack on basically municipal self-determination on issues around running fiber optic.
Yes.
Okay. So
that's one impact. I think that the downstream impact of this could be much greater than anybody realizes, in that this kind of moving local control away from our communities could extend not from telecommunications to electric companies and gas companies and anybody who uses the public right-of-way. So I think the long-term consequences of this could be much worse than any of us are really want to contemplate at the moment.
Well, then I'll just close out with this my musing on this, and that's, I'm a pretty progressive guy, and I'm basically becoming more of a communist in the sense of recognizing that there are things that are essentially communal that belong to the community.
Exactly.
It's the roadways, it's our water, it is our electricity, and I believe that it's appropriate for a city to use its municipal power, its municipal might. And I mean, the same could be said with the state level or the county level or even the federal level. Mm-hmm. But as a small D Democrat, I really do like the charm of cities self-determining wherever possible. And so essentially, I mean, we could approach this from two points of view, that we got to save consumers money. And I don't buy that. I think that's kind of, I get the pocketbook arguments, but I think it's kind of a,
it's a red herring, because they never, ever once. I mean, you think about all the deregulation that this federal government has done. Can you name one thing that they've actually said would save consumers money that actually happened?
Well, there's that side of it where they say they're going to save you money, but they really don't. That is red herring. It's a bait and switch in the case of the electrical deregulation.
Exactly.
But for your guests, and progressive use this all the time for the PUD argument. Well, we got to save people money, and apparently polling says that's what people respond to, which to me shows the lack of imagination on the part of the general public. But it's like there's a kind of pandering there. I really think there's a general social good when a city hardwires itself and makes access to the internet, makes access to electricity a social need and not a profit-driven kind of need. And that's my remark. And that,
absolutely.
And I really want to emphasize, I think it is important to write, and I think you should state several times the name of this thing. So, because I've noticed this years ago coming down the pike, and I mean, the other side of all of this is they want to do this digital transfer. This is a digression. They want to do the digital TV stuff because they're going to sell off all the VHS and UHF, the old television stuff, airways, and they're going to sell that for billions to another group of corporados who are going to just want to make money. And there's going and if there's another area of social area to stake out for the communalist principle, it's the what's going to happen with those old airways. But in any case, keep going. And I think there's a huge social need for this. And I'm a firm believer in cities self-determining on this stuff because we know that. Well, don't get me going on QS now.
Okay.
Right,
thank you so much. We appreciate the call.
I want to follow up because I think it's important. As somebody who used to write surveys for a living, how those surveys are written often determines
what the outcome will be.
And we have done needs assessments for two decades out in the East Metro area, and I've seen national surveys of the same thing. People are willing to support and to pay for institutions and infrastructure that supports their community.
Mm-hmm.
They are not concerned just about low rates. People across the country want healthy communities, and I think for the most part they recognize that those need support, that they need financial support, and that you have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, it depends on how you ask the questions, but overall people are very supportive of the electronic green spaces of electronic town squares, just like they are of parks and public spaces.
And I would agree with that, and I said that earlier, in terms of certainly, the members we represent and folks sort of across the board recognize that, reasonable rates are important, but there are other investments that need to be happening. And again, whether that's in electricity, utilities, natural gas, or in the telecom industry. And I don't think you even have to be a communist to sort of believe that. I think it's, about believing in community and ways that we're reaching out and touching each other and communicating with each other. And, back in, the founding days of this country, it was called town meetings, and our societies are very different these days, but we have different means in which to do those town meetings. And so you don't even have to today go to City Hall to go to a city council meeting, and you don't even have to go on the day they're happening. I mean, you have to if you want to say something, but if you just want to be informed and know what your city officials are doing, all you have to do is know when that is being rebroadcast on your local community access community media channel, and you can tune in and be in touch with what's going on, as well as budget processes, as well as other city bureau offices and that sort of thing. And so the idea that we started with 200 years ago is still the same today, but just using and updating the technology that we have at our disposal.
Well, I think this also points to who controls the commons. Is it the people of their community and their elected leaders? Because if you don't like the way the commons are being put to use in your community, you have the choice to elect someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that to a corporation, unless you want to buy a majority of their stock and change the board of directors, you're stuck with it. And that's something that it starts here. Where does it go?
That's a really good point. So what's coming up today on KBOO? At 9, hear a pilot show called DIY. Portland guests include women who worked on the book PDX Super Crafty and the teacher of a sewing class called Anarchus, Tanks and Tees. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell's back. At 10, it's part one of a series of The Destruction of the World Trade Center, a lecture by David Ray Griffin, author of The New Pearl Harbor and other books. At 10:30, Julie Bernard's guest on Art Focus is gallery director Marjorie Hirsch. She'll be talking about a national I can never say that word. What do you call that thing? You see where I am?
Ceramic conference.
Thank you for saying that for me. I just can't quite get that out of my mouth. Conference coming to Portland and related exhibits at the Foss Arts Center. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include the victory of Hamas in the occupied territories and the case of two New York peace activists sentenced to 6 months in jail for protesting the war. That's what's coming up today on KBOO. If you want to get in on the conversation we're having with Bob Bratting and Jeff Bissonette, feel free to give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we've been talking about a series of bills that are floating through Congress having to do with the Telecommunications Act of 2006 and talking about how detrimental this could be to local communities because of limiting access and limiting the ability of local governments to actually manage and set policy as it relates to franchise expansion in the local community. So rather than going to the city council saying, we think you should not do this, instead, if these bills pass, we will have to go to the FCC and say, we don't like something that's happening locally. Is that correct?
That's correct. But when we're talking about local councils, I think we should also mention that the Portland City Council and the councils in my area have all either adopted or are in the process of adopting resolutions that they are passing on to Senator Smith and Senator Wyden and our congressional delegation, explaining why this is really detrimental to our local communities and opposing these bills and asking to retain local control. I think we also need to realize this is an uphill battle because, as you mentioned, SBC and Verizon are very powerful lobbyists. Mm-hmm. They have been lobbying in Washington for about a century now, you think about it. They're really, really good at what they do, and so they're very powerful. We do have the opportunity, though, because we do have a lot of voices in the country, but it's important that those voices be heard.
So people need to be writing their congressional representatives. They need to be letting their representatives know that they want them to vote no on these telecommunication bills, any bills that does not retain local control and gives the local community the ability to regulate what happens in their local community. That's really the message. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. And then there's one other thing. Tony mentioned it briefly. The FCC just can't stand not to meddle sometimes.
Right.
And so the Federal Communications Commission has open a hearing on this area. Now, they can't create law, mm-hmm. but they can sure interpret the law, and that's part of what they're doing. And this particular step would give them additional powers in the regulation of television. It's really easy to comment on this. All you have to do is go to the Alliance for Community Media website, which is alliancecm.org, and they have a template there, and people can use that. It's straightforward. It's really simple. It's one of the easiest ways to get involved and to do something.
And locally, PCM will have a similar template, I believe, on its website as well.
Right.
And
yeah.
Even on the legislation, we have a whole action section on our website. So if you go to www.pcmtv.org, and right there, pretty obvious on the front page, there's an action button. We'll take you to summaries of all the legislation and ways to communicate with your congressional representatives.
Yeah. And actually, I'd like to just say that Carl Kucharski, who's the executive director at PCM, has done just a fabulous job on
Absolutely.
This. I mean, he's really primarily responsible for creating the FCC template and the material that we just refer people to the PCM website. Mm-hmm. We've just pushed them there because they've done such a terrific job of laying
Excellent.
Out this issue.
Well, it sounds like we have another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
I've got to make this short because I'm calling from Corvallis.
From Corvallis? Cool.
Yeah. Your last caller emphasized that social goods need to be controlled socially rather than by individuals or through boards that represent individuals. Individuals even being corporations in this case.
We don't have enough time to get into that conversation about whether corporations are individuals, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's a whole separate issue.
It is.
And thanks for the laugh, because I get nervous when I start talking in public.
You're doing fine.
There's another aspect of what happens to communities when you get a social good being freely available. And I'm thinking of how the Internet has fostered creativity. From the silence, I can hear that I'm...
No, we're all nodding our heads.
This is on point.
Can't you see our heads going up and down? We're all nodding our heads. Yeah, we're all nodding our heads in the studio.
Yeah, that's what... I don't have a video phone.
New technology is coming. So we agreed. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, last night, I got into touch with 150 people that happened to be interested in a very esoteric kind of issue, namely thin-shell laminated reinforced concrete. We'll go there another time, too.
Yeah, well, I have to get a special co-host for that show, but
yeah.
Okay, we'll do that.
But
your point is that with the Internet...
My point is that without the Internet, I cannot talk to 150 people
That's
in
true.
The western part of the United States.
That's right.
And but with it, I can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the only one that recognizes this. Well, the people at Google and the people at Apple... certainly recognize it. I'm talking about Steve Jobs and whoever the guys are that head Google. They recognize that just putting people together that are interested in a particular thing fosters the creativity available.
Right.
That's hugely important for a community.
Well, you know, it also, I would even go a step further and say what it also does is build community. I mean, you build a community of people, of like-minded individuals who want to share information, resources, and access. But I want to caution you, because we've got a whole segment of our population that is not connected to the Internet at all. And so we can never talk about the Internet as being a whole solution, because there's so many people that just don't have that access.
I'm one of them. I go to the library to get it.
I see.
So,
well, good for
fact,
you.
My wife forbids me from having it in the house.
Well, that sounds like a really long show. but you raise a good... I mean, but I wanted to make sure to put that out there, because as wonderful as the Internet is, as wonderful as it is to be able to talk to people all around the world, if we start focusing all our advocacy electronically, then we forget a whole segment of the community that's just not connected.
Yeah, that wouldn't be connected at
right.
all.
Well, and this is a great example, actually, of why the Commons is so important, why it's important to create the electronic town square, the electronic green space, because without that, people won't have access to it. Not everybody is, for a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. is going to have access to all those levels of communication.
That's
and
right.
it's really important that we create those spaces so people can do that. And the library is one great way for the Internet, because, as you say, mm-hmm. not everybody's going to have access to
right.
the Internet.
Right.
So this collective... Of
yeah,
green spaces
there's
helps
a nasty
create community.
Word, that word collective, and yet, as a community, we are a collective.
Right.
And I'm even beginning to realize that There are limits to the size of communication, or the size of the collective, the number, numerical size of it, and the availability of communication within it. We are four people right now talking on the radio.
Well, if we count you, that would be five.
Yeah. That's going off on another issue.
That's true. Well, we appreciate you calling. Did you have any additional comments you wanted to make before we moved on?
Yeah, that the people in the New York Times are pointing out that the cost of access today in this country is completely out of step with the cost of access elsewhere. For many things, but specifically about internet connection, we pay what they are offering me $50 for $50 a month, something like five, some other string of letters that tell you how much you can get through the pipe.
Right. I'm going to have
$25. Mm-hmm. You can for half the amount.
Right.
You get 10 times the amount out of if you're talking to Mexico from here to Mexico.
So your point, I'm trying to make this short, sweet, to the point so I can move on. So your point is basically that if a regular person wanted to have access to the internet, it costs a lot of money today.
And more important, it's a regulated cost.
Yes.
And that's the only reason for the cost.
It's a regulated cost?
Well, that ours is the FCC that sets the ability of corporations here to limit the cost, or to rather to
I see some heads going. I see some heads going left to right. So we're gonna pick up. We're gonna keep talking about what you've put out there as soon as we move on. But thank you so much for your call.
Thank you for moving me on.
You're very welcome. I'm a pretty pushy woman. You know, they tell me that all the time, but they still keep letting me come back. So thank you so much for calling today. And I'm going to go to a couple of these heads that were shaking left and right and find out what was it about what the last caller just said that spoke comment.
Well, first of all, the FCC doesn't set rates for the for the companies. And, you know, even less and less, the PUC doesn't set rates, at least on the telecommunications side, for, for telecommunications companies. I mean, the PUC regulates basically your basic landline phone service. And then beyond that, not much else. And so there really is, it really is kind of the marketplace at work, and there's not a lot of handles for, consumers, whether as consumers or as citizens, to kind of get a handle on, a lot of that rate setting, in terms of if I think my ISP has, its latest rate increase just bumped up, well, I can't go to the PUC and complain about that because, my ISP, basically, my choice is to go to another ISP.
Mm-hmm.
We just had Comcast announce a 7% rate increase in its in several of its packages. We can't go to the PUC, we can't even go to the FCC, we can't even go to the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission on that. They set their rates, and Comcast sets its own rates, and it's not regulated. And so that's something that people should should be aware of, is that we are as we move forward in the telecommunications world, we do have kind of a market at place, and what we push for at CUB, in because we don't have kind of a regulatory handle on this, is that it takes a lot of consumer involvement to make sure that that we're watching out for ourselves, and as we're made offers and we're made price packages and that sort of thing, that we're very clear on what's being offered, and that we sort of clarify and sort of repeat back, this is what I'm understanding, or that we actually get it in writing. And so if there's some, if it comes back and they try and add something, take away something, you know, charge something higher, that we say, no, this isn't what I offered, or this is not what I was offered. And it's very much on, you know, incumbent on us as individual consumers to do that in this kind of free market world that is the telecommunications industries. But yeah, nobody's really out there setting rates again beyond your sort of basic landline phone service.
Mm-hmm.
But the caller was correct about access and rates for it. The rates in the United States are higher than in most other countries, South Korea, all the Scandinavian countries, almost every European country that I can think of, and some countries that would surprise you, that they have better access. And when I say better, I mean like 10 times better, 10 times faster, or 50 times better, or even 100 times better for less money. And I mean substantially less money. And so that we don't, you know, we talk about competition, but competition is not providing what other countries have. And this is going to be a huge economic deterrent in the future for us. These folks are figuring out how to use the internet for commerce, right, and for economic growth, right, and we'll be lucky if we can call it a horse and buggy, and they're going to be riding Maseratis and Ferraris.
Yeah, and many of these outside the country, it is either a private-public partnership, or in the case of Brazil, a public entity that is going to provide Brazilians with internet access at low cost, because they understand the need and the drive for the communication among people in their country.
Right. And, you know, and I think the point that I want to go back to is the whole idea of the public access, the public having the ability to utilize these communication tools in the local community, to have the access to community radio and community TV, and the ability to really be able to bring that community along on these really critical issues, is in jeopardy if we end up with bills that actually takes the decision-making process out of the local community and puts it with the FCC. There's all kind of long-term implications, short-term and long-term implications in our local community. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking to Bob Bearding from Multnomah Community Television, and Jeff Bissonette, who's the board chair of Portland Community Media and also a staff person with the Citizen Utility Board. I've learned a lot from having you gentlemen here today, so I really appreciate you being here, appreciate your willingness to really talk about what the impact of this legislation could be locally, and wanted to make sure that we left some time at the end to give people some very specific, concrete tools of how they can impact this legislation. And it doesn't hurt to say again, you know, we should be calling Senator Gordon Smith as well as other senators and House members to encourage them that regardless of what bills makes it through and ultimately ends up being voted on, that we want to be clear that any legislation that comes out of this Congress protects local control.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think it's really important that we emphasize that it's important for people to call. Our local governments have taken action, but there's nothing like the voices of a lot of people to get
right.
a politician's attention,
that's
especially
right.
about something that is a relatively obscure issue. This is not going to generate thousands of phone calls
right.
to anybody's office, but actually we're coming pretty close in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
We've had enough calls that we've had some representatives who have shut their phones down for the day because they're sick of hearing from us. That's a great thing.
That's
because
a good
then
sign.
They know people are paying attention.
That's
so
right.
those individual phone calls are critical in this effort.
Mm-hmm. And I really want to support that because, I mean, I go back to the fight around Social Security. You know, if people had just given up and said, well, there's really nothing we can do, these are very powerful lobbyists. They've got a long history. and we just can't stop this. If we had that attitude with Social Security, we'd be now stuck with a really horrendously bad Social Security plan. I want to tell people, if they think that this administration will fix our telecommunication systems, that they should be paying attention to what's happening now with seniors around their prescription drug purchasing opportunities. You know, this Congress supposedly fixed prescription drugs for seniors, and what we're finding is that it is an absolute nightmare and drastically different than what they sold the public when they passed that bill. So another surprise. We've got a caller on the line. I'm going to encourage this caller to be short, sweet, and to the point. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. I just want to say real quickly that I'm just tuning in, so pardon me if this point's already been made, but I think it's really important. If any of this proposed legislation that's before Congress right now passes, eventually what it seems to me is that the cable access will become totally Hollywoodized. And that's what really scares me, because not only is it taking away our community voice, but Hollywoodization puts profits in the pockets of the corporations. And
right.
So it's just so frightening to think of that possibility. I mean, PCM just does a fantastic job in our community, and I can't applaud them enough. I just want to encourage listeners to go to the PCM website, and they direct you how we can make our voices known to our senators, because the proposed legislation is very complicated. I've tried to study it. It is very complicated. And the last point I wanted to make is that people who are involved in nonprofits use public access ways all the time, and nonprofits normally have e-newsletters or they have regular quarterly newsletters.
Right.
I encourage nonprofits to make this issue known to their constituents that our community voice is in jeopardy right here, such as the point you just made. And I think that that's a great way to reach, you know, besides KBOO Airways, it's another great medium to reach the public about our community voice that's being threatened here.
Thank you so much. Those are really great great advice for our listening audience. And the website, pcmtv.org, was the one you were referring to. And, Tom, you wanted to add something to this?
Yeah. Remember that it wasn't long ago that the FCC proposed massive changes in television and what would happen and who could own how many stations. And they were overwhelmed with members of community saying no. We don't want this to happen. They backed down.
Mm-hmm.
They understood that they could not do this and get away with it. And I think we're facing the same situation right now, where we have to tell our government officials that this is not something we want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that the caller makes just an excellent point of, you know, and kind of the theme we've hit on a time or two here, consumers versus citizens, is do we want our media to be completely commercialized, or do we want, you know, at least a small area of it to be protected and dedicated to, you know, community issues, local concerns, and people talking to each other sort of without the filter of you know, sort of commercial interference. And there's certainly a room for, you know, commercial media, commercial television and radio, and they certainly have that space. And what we're trying to do is sort of protect a small space of the electronic airwaves, of the electronic, you know, communication mechanisms, to say there's a piece of that that needs to be dedicated to us as citizens and not just as consumers.
Well, and you just raised a really good point, Jeff, because, I mean, I'm really appalled to think that we would have less community access under this act than we have currently. And basically, that's what you're saying. We're going to have a lot less channels. We'll have a lot less ability to regulate locally. And so it really is something that if people who pay attention to community media and really utilize those airwaves and radio waves, to know that if, in fact, we do nothing, then at the end of the day, what we end up with is a lot less than what we started with.
And I think we should recognize that we'd be lucky to have less, and that the likely long-term outcome of this is none.
is none. Yeah. Well, that's a reality check, right?
Or as the caller said, it's in such a distorted form that we don't recognize it for what it is, and it doesn't actually represent our communities. I mean, I think one of the most important things about what KBOO does, what PCM does, what Multnomah Community Television does, is that it reflects our communities. And it reflects the life in our communities and who we are and who we want to be and gives us a place to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think that these bills all would make that exceedingly difficult and probably impossible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that I've got an education today, and I do want to reiterate what the caller said, which is this is a really complicated issue. This is not something that you can, like, really explain in 15 or 30-second sound bites.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would encourage people to go to the website, go to PCMTV.org or the AllianceCM.org, and you'll have lots and lots and lots of information and lots of ways for you to take immediate action to make sure that your voice is heard through this process. And I do want to encourage you to call Senator Gordon Smith's office and, you know, and tell him how disappointed you are that they were not able to actually come on. It looks like we've got a few callers no, we don't have a caller. So he just wanted to ruin my train of thought is what he was trying to do back there.
Actually, Joanne, I'd like to say, I think in some ways, you know, I hope folks won't let the details of this issue intimidate them or bog them down.
Yes.
It really does come down to, do we want local control? Do we want to have a local face for our community? Do we want to have a place where our communities can go and talk about who we are and who we want to be? And that's really the piece that we need to focus on, I think. I don't think folks should feel like if they're calling Senator Smith's office,
that they have to know everything about the...
They don't. They got to know what they want. They got to say, we want local control. Right. We want to keep this in our community and don't put it at the federal level.
And they do have to realize that it is, you know, in all honesty, an educational process for Senator Smith and for the rest of the legislators, because they hear from, you know, the telecommunication lobbyists that, you know, kind of wander the halls of Congress, you know, every day and don't really think about, oh, this is how it's going to play out in my local community. I know that Senator Smith's staff has gotten a huge education and we've seen some movement on that. And so to continue that movement, you really need to hear from you know, individual citizens, folks saying, this is why this is important to me. And that's extremely powerful.
I think you made a really good point. Yeah, you don't have to actually have a cheat sheet on what all the bills say. You just basically have to know how your current community access is impacting your life, and then what the repercussions would be if this radical change took place. That's a really good point. So in closing, any closing words for either of you gentlemen before we move into the morning?
I want to say that I think Portlanders have an extraordinary opportunity to influence this decision, that Oregonians do, because the idea of electronic community spaces is more powerful in the state of Oregon than it is in almost any other state. Only Massachusetts and Minnesota come to mind as places where it's really powerful and where they have facilities like KBOO, where you have strong community television facilities like PCM, and that with Senator Smith being a mover in this legislation, we have an opportunity to make a huge difference here, and I really hope that folks will take advantage of that.
Have you spoken to Senator Wyden? Do you know where he is on this issue?
Senator Wyden has been very supportive of, you know, the League of Cities and understands that, you know, some of this needs to sort of be reshaped and has committed to, you know, working with his, you know, in his bipartisan way with Senator Smith to make sure that what does come out is shaped and tilted more toward community and toward citizens. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's always good to remind Senator Wyden of that as well and encourage him in that direction.
Well, and that was exactly what I was going to suggest, is that we don't want to leave Senator Wyden off the list of people we're calling to encourage him to stand firm with Oregonians.
And I'd like to thank Joanne for giving me the opportunity to co-host on such a vital issue that really does strike home at the heart of our community. I found out about the issue through the resolution at City Hall by watching it on Community Access. And I said, this is something I really want to learn about. And when I did, I approached Joanne and said, this is something we need to talk about. So I'd like to thank Joanne for that.
You are very, very welcome. I want to also thank Bob Brading, Jeff Bissonette, and my co-host today, Tom Chani. And I want to thank Elliot Weinstein for helping to pull this program together. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. Next week, same time, same place, same channel. Have a great day.
Don't give up the fight. Yeah. We're sick and tired of your ism, schism game. Dynamo to heaven.